This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Well, it's the 2nd of April, not the 1st of April, and there has been lots of developments going on. I say not the 1st of April because it's just so shocking. You actually look at this stuff and you say, can it be true? Anyway, so what's happening today in the United States? Donald Trump's new tariffs are coming into being. There's been a lot of speculation about what they're going to do. We've got our partners at the Financial Times of London giving us the insight into that. They broadcast this on the FT News briefing this morning. Also today, by the way, talking internationally, we've got our first clip from The Economist. They have a number of podcasts and they're fabulous. It's called The Intelligence Podcast. It did a piece on Marine Le Pen, the front runner in the French presidential election. So we'll have that context for you. But as far as South Africans are concerned, everything's happening right here. Government of National Unity on a knife edge. This after the DA played hardball, refused to go along with the ANC's budget. It's the most important vote in any political season. They went against it. And then last night, Action SA decided to switch sides. And the DA is very angry about this. Action SA, on the other hand, says they entirely justified. 6 o'clock this morning, I caught up with Action SA's parliamentary head, Athol Trollope. He was at the airport in Johannesburg on his way, presumably to Cape Town, where the Bobbejaan vandag dance. Let's listen in on part of that conversation. The full conversation is, of course, as with all the other clips here on the BizNews channel on YouTube.
We are in this impasse precisely because the GNU could not come to an agreement about their budget. And as you said, we're not a member of the GNU. So the GNU is a big government, so around 70%. And because they couldn't come together and fix a budget, we are now on this fiscal cliff that we're on. And that's the reality. There's a fiscal cliff. And ironically, over the weekend and over the last couple of days, the DA have been writing to the ANC backwards and forwards and saying they'll accept a VAT increase on condition that they can have more influence in the government and that their role will be, you know, more prominent, etc., etc. So they indicated that they were prepared to accept the increase on condition. We've done exactly the same thing, except we have not put any conditions that are parochial. We've said this is a mess. We believe that the budget can be balanced with revenue that's already in the fiscus. It just needs to find different revenue streams and cut wasteful expenditure. There are a whole lot of reviews that have been tabled in Parliament over the last 5 to 6 years, expenditure reviews of where the government is wastefully spending money. And we said if they just simply implement some of those reviews and go and look for additional revenue, like with SARS, SARS collected a record amount of money last year, and we got the minister to allocate more funding to SARS in this budget, additional 4 billion rand. And SARS believes that there's nearly 800 billion rand on the table to be collected of undeclared taxes and declared taxes. So we believe that this budget can be balanced, and we've negotiated with the ANC to go back and Parliament and the Finance Committee to find ways to fund the budget gap, but not to increase VAT and not to have tax bracket creep. Now, Alec, what's interesting about this is that the DA says we've sold out because we've gone along with the ANC. Ironically, the DA said that they were going to save South Africa by joining the GNU. Now they're indicating they'll save South Africa by getting out of the GNU. So at some stage, people must understand that it can't always be the DA way or the highway. And the ANC have spent the last 72 hours speaking to us nonstop, absolutely nonstop. We had the casting vote in that finance committee. There are 11 members on there. The ANC has 4 votes, the IFP 2, the DA 2, MKP 2, EFF 1, and we have 1. The DA have not spoken to us, not one word over the last week, certainly not over the last 72 hours. So they're so arrogant that they think they can go to a committee and just get their own way. And if they don't, then they blame everybody else. They rolled the dice. They didn't win. They said to the ANC they would support the budget with the VAT increase on their conditions. The ANC said no. And now they're crying foul and calling everyone else traitors and sellouts. It's absolutely ridiculous. Today, we won't be passing the budget. There are a whole lot of steps in the budget process. The Division of Revenue Act will only be passed in June. And we've said to the ANC, go and find the funding. We believe it is there. We've given them a whole list of areas where they can find that funding. And we've given them a month to do that. Now, if they don't do that in the next month, we can always not vote for the budget when it comes to the Division of Revenue. And then the ANC will be in a problem again. So we're basically saying to the ANC, look, you've been in government for a long time. You control the reins of government because you are the biggest party there. Go and fix this mess. And if you can't fix it with the DA, we're prepared to give you support to fix it. We are being pragmatic. We're being the constructive opposition. And then let's see what can be done. But simply saying we're not going to vote for the budget and we'll bring everything to a standstill. Alec, you understand better than most that if this was aborted again, what kind of ripple effect that would have in the economy and in and on the international stage if South Africa could not pass the fiscal framework, could not pass their budget. It would have horrific consequences for a country that's already teetering on the abyss. So really, Alec, we had to come up with a pragmatic plan. That's the plan that we've come up. We've said to the ANC, go and find the additional funding. I hope that they will honor that commitment. And if they don't, we have a mechanism to vote against the budget ultimately.
Mm-hmm. As you can see, Athol Trollope's a farmer. He's an early riser, so he was on his game early this morning. I have been tapping into the DA networks, but nothing coming back for the record. They are meeting today throughout the day. It's quite clear what's on the agenda. I spoke to Davie Ruart, the chief economist of the Efficient Group, earlier this morning and asked him for some context and what he'd be advising the DA if he were in their meetings today.
It's a lot of fun, Alec. Actually, I like what's going on because, I mean, that's democracy at work, isn't it? But no, I'm not too concerned.
Okay, so let's just go back here. The fact that Action SA decided to support or to vote in favor of the budget. I spoke to Athol Trollope at 6 o'clock this morning, and he was giving all kinds of reasons why it made a lot of sense that they need to be pragmatic and they're going to cut the expenses, etc. But the DA guys came straight back to me and they said he's not telling the truth because there are really two options in voting. You either vote for the budget as it is or you reject it as it is. And Action SA is now voting for it and it's going ahead. But who's telling the truth here?
No, that's the fact. You know, you either vote for the budget or you vote against the budget. I don't know if the ANC will get enough support to vote to get the 201 that they require to get the budget passed. But it looks as if they're very close to that. I think the main issue here is not really about VAT. Everybody's talking about VAT, and that's the sticking point. And the main issue here is who's going to blink first, it seems to me. And that's what the political parties are trying to see if they can. This is a game of chicken, I suppose. They want to see who's going to sit with the egg on their face in the end. If the ANC does not force through an increase in VAT, then they will sit with the egg on the face. And if they actually succeed in forcing through the half a percent increase in VAT, then they will come out, well, I guess, looking fairly good after this budget. I think this is a lose-lose for the ANC. If they succeed in doing this, everybody's going to point fingers at the ANC and say, you increase taxes, and especially in the poor. If they don't succeed in doing this, they would have blinked first. I guess this is a lose for the ANC. It doesn't matter how you look at it.
So where we are at the moment is that the DA are meeting today to decide on whether or not to stay in the government of national unity. That is pretty clear from all of the feedback that we've received. What would your advice to them be?
I would tell them, no, do not give in to this 0.5% increase and also demand an adjustment, an inflation adjustment to personal income taxes. And then a third demand a reduction in state expenditure. There are plenty of places where you can cut back. So no, don't give in. They've given in far too much, just by the way. The ANC, the DA lost a lot of face until the budget. This is the opportunity for the DA to put their name back on the agenda because they've lost a lot of support until now. I think they're doing an excellent job. I'm not a great supporter of the DA, but they've been doing an excellent job the last 2 months or so.
What about Mr. Tlabisa and the IFP, or Corne Mulder and the Freedom Front, and Gayton McKenzie and the Patriotic Alliance? Would it be similar advice to them, or given what Action SA has done, maybe they'll be lining up for goodies?
Well, that's politics, unfortunately. And I guess that's exactly what Action South Africa is there for. They want a position somewhere. And I'm sure some of the other political parties want a favor somewhere else as well. That's what politics is about. I'm an economist. I look at the numbers and I tell them what's good for the country. And what is good for the country is not to give in to the ANC, but to start cut back on state spending. We are heading for a disaster.
First principles, cut back on state expenditure. Otherwise, we're heading for a disaster. Exactly the same state principles or first principles that Elon Musk has been applying through the Doge issue in the United States. They made it pretty clear that the United States was going bankrupt unless they cut aggressively. That would happen. Well, South Africa, similar stories here. And I would urge you to go and watch that full interview of Davi Ritz. It's up now on the BizNews TV channel. Well, while politics was being played around the budget, last Thursday in Cape Town, there was something that the mayor of Cape Town was clearly delighted about it. Let's have a look at the way he described this.
Well, something extraordinary has just happened in Cape Town. It's caused a little bit of pandemonium behind me, but the leader of the opposition in Cape Town, the leader of the ANC in Cape Town, Councillor Baneli Majingo, has just resigned his seat and has joined the DA. An extraordinary moment. I think it's historic. I'm not sure that this has ever happened before. And I think his resignation letter is very, very powerful, and I want to read it. He says, "After careful consideration, I've come to realize that my personal values and principles are now more aligned with those of the Democratic Alliance. I'm committed to their pursuit of clean governance and economic growth. And here, this is the kicker, I'm increasingly impressed with their commitment to deliver for poor residents and the unemployed. I want to say thank you to Councillor Majingo for those words and for that integrity. And I want to speak directly to all of the current ANC councillors, members, and indeed, most importantly, ANC voters in our city, in our country, who might be thinking and feeling just the same as Councillor Majingo, your leader, the ANC's leader here in Cape Town, is feeling. He has joined the DA today, and I invite you to do the same. He has realized we are building the future here. We are building a future of opportunity for our country and for our city. He's joined the DA, and invite you all to do the same. Big news here in Cape Town."
Ebullient just puts it mildly. That's the executive mayor of Cape Town, Jordan Hill Lewis. Well, earlier today, I managed to finally get to have a chat with the 40-year ANC veteran, Baneli Majingo. Again, the full interview is on BizNews TV, but here's a highlight.
It has been a shocking decision to many people, because nobody knew about it. And I also took time to make that decision because it has hurt me deeply, because I've been part of the ANC. ANC has been my home. And then when I considered that decision, it was hurting. But I had to make that decision.
You've been called a traitor, and I'm sure much worse words than that by people in the ANC camp. You must have known that this was the kind of reaction that was likely.
Because I've been in the ANC for a very long time, at least I expected such, but I knew how to respond to such insults or diminutive words, if you want to call it that.
Take us through those thoughts of yours, the what shaped your massive decision.
During the last meeting in January, we were instructed not to participate in the council meeting, which I had a different view, and I shared those views. As a public representative, when you are not participating in such a meeting, it means you are abdicating your responsibilities. You are failing to take a diligent move as expected from an ordinary person. Part of our mandate as public reps is to make sure that we participate in decision-making, play oversight, and also make sure that the interest of our communities, which is the people, are protected at all times. So we have failed in doing that, in our fiduciary duty to participate in that meeting. And that was a turning point for me.
So what's next for Banele Majengo? You've now moved from the leader of the ANC in Cape Town to the DA. Are you going to be serving on the council in future, or have you got other plans within the Democratic Alliance?
For now, having changed to the Democratic Alliance, I'm arriving here as a foot soldier. I'm going to work as an organizer, grow its support in almost all areas, because I've been a leader in the region. So Metro, I'm known everywhere. And then there are areas where I think the DA can make an impact. So we are going to go there full force.
That's the former leader of the ANC in the Cape Town City Council, Banele Majengo, a 40-year veteran of that organization. Well, you would have noticed in yesterday's briefing, we led with the shock news. There's lots of shock and drama going on at the moment, isn't there? That there was a group of 20 policemen, 7 vehicles, that arrived at the home of one of the Fort Hare duo of attorneys, in this case, Bradley Conradie, to serve him with a court order. Essentially what they did to Bradley and Sarah Berger, the two investigators who were called in to investigate corruption at Fort Hare, is that they have now frozen all their assets. It's an extraordinary story of abuse of state power and driven by the Premier, yes, still sitting ANC Premier of the Eastern Cape. Let's have a look at the conversation that I had with Bradley and Sarah yesterday.
Oh, I mean, there is a beginning, and that beginning is when we were assisting the university with many investigations.
The university?
Of Fort Hare. And as a result of all of our investigations, we realized very early on that we weren't able to access people's bank records, etc. We assisted the University of Fort Hare in drafting papers to get the SIU, a proclamation to have the SIU come into the university and do
SIU?
The more special investigations units, to come and do the more sort of heavy-handed subpoenaing of bank records and things like that, which, you know, we can't do. As a result of those investigations, the SIU came in and we supported them. We assisted them with one of the murder accused on corruption allegations. We've been assisting the Hawks for 6 years and we continue to support them. To give you an indication of how entrenched we were at the university, since we were released on bail in April 2024, we've conducted 2 investigations for the Special Investigations Unit for Fort Hare. On 28 March 2024, 1 year ago, we were arrested on fraud and corruption allegations, and we sat back and we thought, but how could this ever be the case? Well, what people don't know, and it's always about timelines, is that in the year before, in the late 2023, Oscar Mabiane, the Premier of the Eastern Cape, was challenging the Special Investigation Unit's proclamation, presidential proclamation, in which he cited the president as a respondent, to overturn their investigations in its entirety at the university on the basis that there was a report that Horizon produced that shows that he allegedly tried to fraudulently obtain a master's and a PhD degree. Now, he succeeded on a technical point, not to overturn the entire Special Investigations Unit's investigation, but the fact that it didn't specify master's and PhD degrees. The Special Investigations Unit then came to us and said, help us draft a portion of an extension to that proclamation, which Horizon Forensics did, and the team at BCHC. Now it has been put into play and the president has authorized it, and he can be investigated for academic fraud, but nothing has happened to him. Now, in February 2024, the prosecuting authority came to see Horizon Forensics at our offices in Cape Town with two captains of the Hawks, and they asked me to talk about Oscar Mabiane's matter, as well as his supervisor that had facilitated multiple politicians with the same modus operandi, selling shelf degrees to politicians. I said to the prosecuting authority and to the Hawks that I'm prepared to explain the fraud that went on between the professor as well as Mabiane, which were two separate criminal complaints which we had prepared, but that Horizon would not be prepared to testify on the matter, but given that it's politically charged. 1 month later, we were arrested.
But the fact that there's such a heavy-handed response to you would suggest to me that this goes very deep.
There are many other politicians that got their degrees from the University of Fort Hare on the same basis, that the professor concerned was running a business pretty much, selling degrees at all levels. But his main connection was to the politicians. And we know that about a year, I think it was a year or 2 years ago, the former Minister Kiewit, who was also a premier in the Eastern Cape, was also exposed for only having a matric certificate, although she claimed an honours and a master's degree. So this thing runs deep.
In the world of business banking, the bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At SunExchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Well, moving on to the international scene now, this being April the 2nd, is Trump Tariff Day. Our partners at the Financial Times of London had a close look and provided context in this morning's FT News briefing.
It is finally here. U.S. President Donald Trump is set to announce his tariff plans today. And he's promised this will be a, quote, liberation day that will rebalance global trade. Here to talk about what markets are expecting is the FT's U.S. financial commentator, Rob Armstrong. Hi, Rob.
Hi, it's great to be back.
Good to have you. So, Rob, we don't have a ton of details from Trump or the White House about what these tariffs will look like, but what is Wall Street expecting?
Well, I think there is pretty broad consensus that after all the announcements are done and over with, America's trade partners will face average tariffs for importing goods to the United States in the range of 10 to 20%. And that will make it the highest average tariff rate that we've seen in this country since before the Second World War. Point number two, and I'm going to put a little asterisk by this one, but okay. Point number two is that Wall Street expects the tariffs that are announced this afternoon to focus on America's biggest trade partners where the U.S. has the biggest trade deficits. So that's China, the EU, Vietnam, Japan, the list goes on like that. That's what the White House has called the Dirty 15.
What is the asterisk, though?
Well, the asterisk is we've gotten information out of the White House that maybe rather than focusing on the Dirty 15, universal tariffs of some level, perhaps a high level, are still being discussed, which would be a different game altogether.
Okay, so we've got average tariffs of between 10 and 20%. We have a somewhat of an idea of who the White House is going to target. What else is Wall Street expecting?
Well, then we come to sectoral tariffs. So in contrast to tariffs that focus on individual trading partners, we have tariffs expected on sensitive sectors, semiconductors, pharmaceuticals, lumber, copper, areas like this. The expectation is that these will be kicked down the road. And finally, there is a expectation slash hope of a little bit of softening of the trade tensions with our immediate neighbors, Mexico and Canada, both of whom are very important partners for us.
What is all that expected to do to markets?
Well, the thing that has been repeated again and again is that the market just wants certainty. The market has been suffering probably more from the vacillation and uncertainty about tariff policy than it has from the threat of very high tariffs itself. That being said, that probably means equities don't like this very much. Stocks don't like tariffs. Bonds like it a little better because they're a safe haven asset. So people go running to treasury bonds and when growth expectations diminish. And for technical reasons I won't go into, probably higher tariffs strengthen the dollar.
You know, but the Trump administration's argument is that this stock market volatility is short-term pain for long-term gain. What have analysts told you about the actual long-term economic impact of these tariffs?
Tariffs are a tax. Taxes, all else equal, are a drag on economic activity. So if tariffs go up globally, that diminishes global growth by some degree. The question is, whose growth gets diminished? And that is actually a very hard question to answer because we haven't run an experiment like this in almost 100 years.
Rob Armstrong is the FT's U.S. financial commentator. Thanks, Rob.
Cheers.
The Economist is focusing on the other side of the Atlantic in this clip that we have pulled from its wonderful daily podcast called The Intelligence. It looked at France and the ructions that have occurred there in the last 48 hours over the strong frontrunner for next year's presidency, Marine Le Pen. Let's have a look at what is going on and get some context from The Economist.
Marine Le Pen seemed absolutely livid yesterday. She left the courtroom before the presiding judge had even read out her sentence. She just walked out, carried her handbag, disappeared into the car and was off. She muttered under her breath, unbelievable.
Sophie Petter is our Paris bureau chief.
She has clearly not seen this coming. It was a shock to her, to her party. It was a worse sentence than anyone had expected.
C'était une décision politique. Des juges ont mis en place des pratiques que l'on croyait réservées au régime autoritaire.
C'est arrivé à d'autres avant vous, Madame Le Pen.
Est-ce que vous vous rendez,
Madame Le Pen, c'est arrivé à Hubert.
On French TV channel TF1 last night, she called it a political decision that reflected the practices of authoritarian regimes.
And what happens to Le Pen now? Because she can appeal this, right?
Well, she can appeal, and the sentence applies while she appeals, so it all depends on how long that takes. You know, an appeal doesn't just happen overnight. It can take 1 to 2 years. That would mean that it might drag on into the period of the next presidential election in 2027. That is one option that's available to her. Another is that she could appeal to the Constitutional Council. That's France's highest constitutional body, and put in an emergency appeal on the grounds that the freedom of the electorate has been compromised. But whether that can be heard in time and whether the council would rule in her favour is an open question.
And Sophie, what happens with the election in 2027? We already know that Macron can't run because he's already had his terms, and now Le Pen can't run. What will happen?
Well, it does throw everything wide open if indeed she cannot run in 2027. She was the leading candidate in the sense that polls, even at the weekend, showed that she was way ahead in the first round of voting. You have to go back to 1974 to find a French presidential candidate who hasn't won, having gained over 30% of vote in the first round.
So the story there is that the judges have ruled that Le Pen's party, the right-wing party, has misappropriated €4 million from the European Union. She says it's ridiculous. And well, at this, as things stand right now, and as you heard from The Economist earlier, she can appeal it. But as things stand right now, who knows who's going to be the next president of France when the elections come up in the not too distant future. Well, that's been your briefing for today. Bronwyn will be back with the briefing tomorrow. Until then, cheerio. This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.